Dr. Michael Roizen.
Dr. Michael Roizen.
You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show.
You're listening to You, the Owner's Manual Radio Podcast on iHeart and Radio MD and wherever you downloaded it from. Thanks very much for downloading it. We have a pair, that is a couple, that have written a wonderful book called Anti-Cancer Living, Transform Your Life and Health with the Mix of Six. And the mix is key. We'll come to that in a second. This is podcast number 900. Maybe we should have firecrackers going off in the background or something for a round number. 900 is a lot of podcasts. If you do one a week, I guess that's, 18 years worth of podcasts or 17 plus. But in any case, this is Anti-Cancer Living, and it is a marvelous book. The authors are husband and wife, and I don't know if they started out that way, but it's Lorenzo Cohn and Allison Jeffries. They're both from Texas, and they have a lot of experience with people, both prevention and really treatment of cancer and getting people to live longer after they have it. They're from the MD Anderson Cancer Center. So thank you both for coming on.
Thank you so much for having us.
Great to be with you today.
Now, you talk about the mix of six as anti-cancer living, but that mix really works for everything, every disease we know of, right? The same mix works to prevent heart disease, stroke, dementia, as well as cancer.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that is, what's the downside of engaging in the mix of six? There's very little. And the upside is that although there's no guarantees of preventing cancer or modifying cancer outcomes, because there are no guarantees, it's about a risk reduction model. But the side effect, so to speak, is that, yes, you have a reduced risk also of cardiovascular disease, which includes heart disease and stroke, diabetes, and we believe even some forms of dementia, certainly the forms that we now know are linked to a common process across all of these diseases, which is inflammation. So this is really, among other things, an anti-inflammatory lifestyle approach.
So we're talking with Lorenzo Cohn and Allison Jeffries, Jeffries. Anticancer-living.com is the website. Anti-Cancer Living, Transform Your Life and Health with a Mix of Six is the title of the book. And if people have listened to this podcast or radio show before, they will have known of the mix of six of support, stress, sleep, exercise, diet, and minimizing exposure to toxins. But how did you come up with that mix? In other words, how did you come up with both the order, and is it an order in order of importance, and why? And what I love is that you stress the mix is really important. So can one of you talk to me a little bit about the mix?
Yeah, so I'll start us off here with the first question about, you know, why these six areas. As a researcher in oncology now for over 20 years and as a behavioral scientist, of course, I focus on that side of the equation. You know, what is it that people can do to minimize risks? And, initially all the research kind of lining up in the epidemiological literature, finding these associations between the way people were leading their lives. And what typically rises to the top are things like diet, exercise, and stress. And there is a really overwhelming amount of data now linking those three behaviors or lifestyle factors and multiple biological pathways that we know are linked with cancer. adding to that, you know, the epidemiological data and some more elegant manipulations that you can do with animals and emerging clinical trials, you start to get this clear picture that in fact behavior matters. When it comes to being successful at behavior change, that's when we started looking at these other two components of love and support, as well as sleep. And although there's less data, direct cause and effect linking sleep deprivation to a risk of cancer or worse outcomes, that data does exist, as well as linking social support to cancer-related processes, as well as mortality in some populations. And then, of course, the environmental toxins. We know, of course, many things that we are exposed to on a daily basis are either what we call low-dose carcinogens, which is believed that enough cumulative exposure will actually, you know, cause change in cell function. And then, of course, the other big category are the endocrine disruptors. So the order was actually very specific with the intention to help people be successful in changing their behaviors.
And as an educator, one of the things that we see is that it's really tough to make these changes without the proper support in place. And so what we are suggesting is that instead of launching like we have all done, you know, suppose you want to start a diet, you launch into it, tomorrow's the day, and by lunch you feel like you've sabotaged yourself because you had a snack in the workroom or friends want to meet for dinner and drinks tonight. So what we're saying is back up a bit and get a support team in place before you take that first step. And that, you know, we're really successful when we work with people around us and put into place that support. So, you know, make a statement to a friend or a colleague, I am interested in making this change in my life and I'm going to need some support to do it. And I just want to let you know because I'm ready to do it. So we put the support piece first, getting that in place, then allows you to be successful in the other five areas.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more with that. In our work with RealAge, in the 150,000 people who were most successful at making themselves younger, making their real ages younger, they all had a buddy. And that's part of our buddy system in coaching. Is exactly what you said, the support from a buddy. You actually stress support from a friend or loved one even more than that. But the point that I think you've brought so strongly is that it enables, if you will, you to be successful and in sustaining a behavior change.
That's right, and there's also the flip side, of course, is that your friend group and your network could also make it more challenging to be successful, and you know, the more you can have it all line up for supporting you, the better. The other factor is that all of these factors, either directly or indirectly, again, modify different processes in the body. So, you know, we know that overweight and obesity is now linked with over a dozen different cancers. And so, you know, meaning that overweight obesity is a risk factor not only for heart disease and diabetes, but also for cancer. And that when people approach weight loss, they think exclusively of, you know, calories in, calories out. So let's burn more calories by exercising more and let's eat less. And ideally, if they're a little more educated, they know that it's not just calories, and they need to eat healthy food. But on top of that, if you don't address your sleep and you're sleeping 6 hours or less and you're chronically stressed all the time, both those factors influence metabolic pathways. So we know that an individual who is sleep deprived will have a harder time losing weight, and sleep deprivation modifies insulin glucose pathways and how your food is metabolized, as does stress. So by not putting as much on the table as possible to help you, for example, with weight loss, you're you know, going to only be getting so much out of an exercise diet plan to get you healthy.
Let me go to an area that we've had touched on before, but you stress in a major way, and I'm going to go to the endocrine disruptors in a second. But before I do that, let's talk about tap water, because we often have debates where you need a little of the minerals in tap water rather than filtered water, and you talk about filtering your tap water. Talk to me about the tap water in America, which you do so well in the book.
Well, so, you know, the whole area of the environment is very challenging, and it does vary from state to state, from city to city, in terms of air, in terms of water quality. A wonderful resource is the Environmental Working Group, EWG.org, and they are a non-governmental, non-profit organization trying to, among others out there, get information to the public on these types of questions. What is in my tap water? And are there low-level carcinogens or endocrine disruptors in my water where I should be concerned about filtering it? And, you know, as you note, there are minerals that are available in water that you may not get from other sources. But, you know, if it's coming at a cost of getting, you know, endocrine disruptors or a low-level carcinogen, it may be better to try and get those vitamins and minerals from other sources. Of course, you know, distilled water, pure H2O, that's all it is those two molecules, and there's nothing else in there. So, you know, that is not ideal. You can get other things that are healthy for you beyond H2O in healthy water. So the key that we talk about in the book Anti-Cancer Living is using the precautionary principle. And I would approach water consumption using the precautionary principle as well.
So tell us about define the precautionary principle, will you? And then let's move on, if you will, to the how you should choose a filter and what you mean by filter your tap water.
So the precautionary principle is that you approach really everything, and you want to think, you know, obviously in the book we talk about, you know, from the top of your head to the tip of your toes, and then your exposures in the greater world. And what you really want to do is make sure that you approach all of these products and exposures with caution. And if you don't need to do it, don't do it. If you don't need to put the cream on your body, you don't use it. That you do some research, as Lorenzo mentioned, EWG.org is a great resource. That you be a informed consumer of what you are putting inside and on your body, and that you just try and reduce your exposure to toxins at every step until you know that something has been proven to be safe for the human body.
And when you let's go to the endocrine disruptor group, which you list as possible shampoo, conditioner, hairstyle, soap, et cetera, things from the top to the bottom. And we've known these as disrupting endocrine systems, meaning potentially interrupting estrogen and testosterone production and formation mainly. But you talk about them as potential carcinogens as well. Tell me about that.
I guess an endocrine disruptor in a low dose, which these typically are, in and of themselves are probably not carcinogenic, but when the endocrine system is involved in the cancerogenic process, then they end up being linked with cancer. But I would say, you know, not necessarily classified as a direct carcinogen like formaldehyde, for example, which causes cancer more directly. Tobacco being another example as a direct carcinogen. So I guess you could call them more of an indirect. The concern with endocrine disruptors, of course, is that although, you know, many industry sources will say that yes, there are endocrine disruptors in these different products, but it is such a low dose and such a low exposure that the FDA, of course, has approved them as otherwise safe. The concern, of course, is that if they are studied, they are studied in isolation. And we, of course, are exposed to a combination of multiple endocrine disruptors as well as often combined with some direct carcinogens. But the exposure is constant. So, you know, you brush your teeth every day, you wash your hair every day, you put body cream on every day. And although it's a low dose, you're constantly entering your bloodstream, and that's where there is some concern and wanting to err on the side of caution where possible.
We're talking with Lorenzo Cohn and Allison Jeffries. The book they have written is wonderful and marvelous, Anti-Cancer Living, Transform Your Life and Health with the Mix of Six. I'm a strong believer in one of the, and by the way, their website is anticancer-living.com. I'm a strong believer in it takes all six of these, meaning that if you miss one, it's almost like it's a chain link that then something can come through. Is that what you mean, or am I misinterpreting what you're saying?
No, I think that you understand it. We're talking about the necessity for the synergy of these six things to work together to give you every opportunity to reduce your risk of developing cancer, and if you have cancer, to reduce your risk of recurrence. And so it's really fortifying all of these different things on their own, as well as their, like Lorenzo spoke about previously, about their interaction with each other. So it's the synergy of these six things together and standing alone that, like you said, creates as strong a fence as possible to aid your cancer treatment if you're a cancer patient, or to, you know, prevent cancer developing if you're not.
Now, the only thing I thought was missing in this book, and it's beautifully written and annotated, and for those who want or look for scientific evidence, this is a great resource as well to help you guide your lifestyle. Again, it's Anti-Cancer Living by Lorenzo Cohn and Allison Jeffries. But the one thing I wondered why you left out was some simple things such as, and you allude to vitamin D, but you left out, for example, aspirin, which is a strong cancer preventative, at least in the data I know of, as well as a few other things that are easy as cancer preventatives. And only you only give about a paragraph to coffee. Another thing that is, for those who are fast metabolizers, strongly anti-cancer. Can you comment, why did you tend to leave out aspirin?
So, yes, you're correct, in particular in the area of colon cancer. I think people are now being advised, certainly if they have a familial risk, that low-dose aspirin may be a good prevention technique, as well as after diagnosis and improving outcomes, decreased recurrence of disease. We really were focusing here on behaviors and avoiding talking about any of what we classify as ingestibles. So whether that is a conventional over-the-counter drug or even some of the prescription-based anti-inflammatories that are being explored in the area of chemo prevention, or even some natural products being explored. So, you know, many books that would fall into this category have a whole chapter on turmeric or curcumin, which would be the extracted ingredient that we know is a potent anti-inflammatory. So here, you know, when we is the furthest we would go in discussing an ingestible would be as a whole food, as a plant. So, you know, ginger we know is a potent anti-inflammatory and could be a useful anti-nausea agent. But we talk about it as a food and how you would use it in cooking, even though you can go to health food stores and buy ginger supplements. We didn't talk about fish oil, which, of course, as well as vitamin D, which are both being explored as anti-cancer agents from more of this chemo prevention perspective. So anti-cancer living approach is really about what the evidence shows when it comes to our own behaviors.
We've been talking with, and I want to thank Lorenzo Cohn and Allison Jeffries for giving us their time. The book is Anti-Cancer Living, Transform Your Life and Health with the Mix of Six. It's a wonderfully written, wonderfully referenced book that covers the behaviors and major categories, that is support, managing stress, improving sleep, physical activity, food choices and portion size, and managing exposures to environmental toxins that work together to help you both prevent and prevent recurrences of cancer, and maybe, and at least in my mind, virtually every disease that is associated with getting older and aging as well. A really tremendous book. Thank you very much for coming on, and thank you, the listener, for downloading us. Do rate us. And Ben, thank you for great engineering as usual.